League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Welcome back to the Lozcast. It's good to have you guys, my compatriot, fellow podcaster, Jamie Slevin. It's good to have you.
Lauren, same act.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me as well. We really appreciate all the feedback that we've had on the podcast so far, but it is still growing. And if you guys want to get out there, put a bit of weight behind it, I'm happy for you to tweet it, Instagram it. You can put it on TikTok if you like, all these kind of things. We don't do video for this just yet, but we're very grateful for anyone that does listen and watch and those kind of things. You're part of a small community, but you are part of a growing community, and that's what's important. You're also part of a community that is not necessarily just about, what happened in football this week, which is why we're talking a little bit. And I was kind of frustrated because you and I finished the podcast last week, and before it, I'd had this thought. I wanted to cover the Apple launch for what they call the Vision Pro. Did you see this?
I did see this.
Right. Okay. So what did you see about it, and what were your thoughts about Vision Pro when you saw it?
The first thought I had was, well, I felt really silly.
Right. Why?
Because my previous conception of virtual reality was the thing where you stuck it on your head.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see anything else. You were right. In a game. And then it was like, oh yeah, obviously see the world and see everything else.
Right.
And I felt silly for having
that. That's called mixed reality, I think, or like... Have you never seen Google Glass? Are you too young for Google Glass? Do you remember Google Glass? You don't remember Google Glass?
I'm shaking my head.
Okay, so Google Glass, and it's kind of like, it's not really moving on from that, but just to lay the foundation here, Google Glass was something that Google did 6-7 years ago now. And it was like a little headset that you wore. It was too far ahead of its time, but it was also interesting. It was basically a tiny little headset that you wore with a tiny little screen, like up in the top right-hand side of your eye, basically. And you could see it, and it would sort of lay out bits of information for you. So you could like Google things on the fly. I think the idea was it would sort of change everything that was happening in your day, because you could sort of go Google or this, or, you know, where's my shopping list? And it would bring it up, basically a bit like an Apple Watch. But it looked so weird, it didn't really work. And it was a bit future, maybe slightly dystopian. And it also didn't immerse you enough in its reality that you didn't feel silly enough in real reality to be wearing it, if that makes sense. Whereas it seems as if this is quite an immersive experience, right? And already it got me straight away. My thought was, what does this mean for sports broadcasting? As any normal person would think, right? My first thought was sports broadcasting.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's terribly boring to suggest
it is
that I feel always slightly dystopian,
right,
this kind of thing.
Of course.
And we're going to get onto that in just a moment.
Well, there's always a sense, I think, around any new technology, there is always a sense of dystopia, right? Or there's always a sense of apprehension, because inevitably it makes you, as with any human condition, it makes you think about the future and therefore slightly nervous for the change that is coming, but also anticipating it in an excited way.
It makes you realize how attached you are to your previous conditioning.
And we've become so conditioned by the previous kinds of broadcasting that I thought it was, in part one of this podcast, we're going to lay out the current fixtures of everything that is sports broadcasting. Part two, we're going to go through what we would do with VR and AR. And part three is all about the future of sport and broadcasting in general. And I've got an interesting idea I kind of want us to unpack. If you guys haven't already subscribed, hit it now. We're about to get deep on the Lozcast, which maybe I might change the name. Okay. TV, radio. I want to say those were... Radio was the first live way of hearing about sport, right? And obviously newspapers, but that wasn't live. That was delayed. You had to wait a day or two to be able to read in the Sunday papers whatever it was that had happened the previous day, right?
Yeah, live is the paradigm shift.
Exactly, yeah. And live, not being there, but being able to feel like you're there, being able to hear the crowd, being able to hear the commentator, those guys bringing those things to life. It was, I think, pretty life-changing for our population, right?
And it sounds like a naff thing to say now, but I think most football fans can connect with the fact the games they're not at,
right?
Especially if they're away from home or something, they can feel indifferent towards. And then right. They go to the next home game, for example, and go, this is the most important thing in the world. And going, that's a weird disconnect.
Proximity is like a weird one, right?
Mm.
But TV and inevitably, I think most technologies in some way reduce proximity to the subject, or at least they make you feel like you've got reduced proximity. And that's why VR, AR felt so interesting to me.
And it's also interesting why when you watch the television, the commentary makes it a watchable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I've got to admit, there are times where I've really enjoyed watching broadcasts without any commentary. There was a button you could press for a while where it was like, just turn the commentary off. And I did.
You know what's interesting though? The games you're able to turn the commentary off for
mm-hmm.
are the ones where you're already invested. Whereas right. you need the storytelling.
For others. Yeah, and that was where, I guess, being a developer of maybe that like first wave of second screen experiences is what I would call them, like the kickoff, and obviously the club is around now, and pitch side, and Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV as DR Sports. And there's loads of people now who watch sports. And it's become like almost a fixture of what is going on. That was a quite unusual idea even until a couple of years ago.
And we should unpack that because yeah. we have this first order of broadcasting.
Right.
We can call radio and television.
Yeah.
The premise being this thing's happening and you're following along.
Right. And you're not there, but you're hearing it and you're sort of invested by proxy of the radio and therefore everything.
And there's some kind of intentional presentation of it to you.
Right.
To make you feel as close as you can.
And that kind of, again, is like the conditioning that we've been through, you know, by having it presented to us. Like, hello and welcome to the BBC. Today we're going to be telling you all about blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of never really left us until the last decade, and even then.
But then that's why you're such an interesting voice on this, because you were obviously at the...
Inception
of this now, let's call it the second order.
Sure. No, I mean, even... Is it the second order? It's probably like the third or fourth. There are many different waves. So what we were classing this as is there's radio, which is colourless television. Then you have black and white television. Do you know when the first TV broadcast was of football?
Yes, I do, Lawrence. The first one was a, quote, specially arranged friendly match between Arsenal and Arsenal reserves on the 16th of September, 1937.
So pre-Second World War, a time of, I wouldn't describe it as a particularly hopeful time, because I think the 30s, I mean, I don't know enough about the 30s, but they always seem fairly sort of bleak to me. They always talk about the roaring 20s. The 30s, I think, weirdly, like, a lot happened in the 30s that led to the 40s, and then the 50s sort of led on from that. So the 30s was a time of great revolution, I think.
The 30s, I think, shit, the war's coming.
Yeah.
And I can't get over that.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And the Second World War is a huge marker for that. So the fact that it's pre-Second World War, when, by the way, there was a great arms race and technology race in the first place, and TV became a huge part of how we can see, how we consume media, was a big, interesting aspect of it, right? Like the TV and the radio became these kind of conduits to the people who were leading, it's not the revolution, but leading our allies. So, you know, you gather around the television or the radio to hear the Queen or Churchill or whoever it was. And so that kind of became quite instructive about, and a good way of learning, I guess, as to how people became connected through media.
Exactly. And as we're going to get onto the second or third, whatever we're calling it, wave of media, these watch-alongs mm-hmm. are actually a much more personal and individual experience.
Right.
Because I'm going to be watching my Arsenal Fan TV on my phone.
Sure.
At potentially a different time to you with a different video. Whereas the radio, I have this image of us all huddling around right. to hear the Epic Cup third round draw on a Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah.
Or England-Scotland. And essentially, since the 30s, the fundamental experience of consuming football has remained the same.
Yeah, and there have been small bumps, I think. And I heard a fascinating podcast with Werner Herzog, you know, the documentary maker. I think he's Austrian. And he was asked how he would film and change football. That's going to be a YouTube video for me at some point as to how I would film and change football. But he was talking about, why don't we shoot it on a wider lens? I want to be able to see the whole field. Why is it always that there is this like received idea of how football should be shot?
Have you ever sat or stood behind the goal at the stadium, like in the heavens?
Yes.
And it's like on FIFA, you would call a tactical view.
Yeah.
And it totally changes your perception of what's happening.
Yeah.
Football ceases to become about individuals and starts becoming about shapes and space.
Yeah. And your conception of the whole thing is quite different. And that's what I'm wondering. I mean, we can talk about this in the dystopian future segment. I kind of want to continue down our timeline, but it is about that for me. And that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, just that point, as kind of novel as it sounds, implies something quite important, which is the way football's presented and has been fairly continuously presented, a couple of bumps aside, has created football culture.
That's so true. At least modern football culture. I mean, you can talk about the bump between black and white going to colour. And obviously, you know, seeing football in colour is going to help you quite a bit. You can still differentiate between hues in black and white, but I'd imagine, and also to an extent, like I know how, I think I could tell you if you blurred how Steven Gerrard was running, I could tell you that was Gerrard. Or if you blurred like Mo Salah, I could be like, that's Mo Salah or Messi. So black and white isn't as ridiculous as it seems, but like the England team won in black and white. England won the World Cup in black and white. It's just that we see the footage now in colour because it's been recoloured.
Yeah, and then the second small bump to consider is the invention of football in 1992 with Sky Sports.
Oh, but that isn't a bump that we should overlook, by the way, because I think the Sky Sports revolution was a fascinating one. First of all, it was the first time where it felt a bit, for want of a like a better shorthand, 1984-ish, where it was sort of like the man was taking over, but he was also making everyone feel like they were kind of invested in it in a sense. So like before that, it was like, the BBC would just do, here's match of the day, that's what you get. And everyone would be like, great, we'll huddle around the TV. Now Sky was like, no, screw that. Like, we're not doing that. We're bringing football to the man. Like, we've got Soccer AM and like, you know, we're cool and trendy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so my only first-hand or second-hand experience of this is watching Premier League Years.
Right.
And if you watch the 92-93 episode for the first Premier League season, they have like Super Sunday and that's exciting. And you have Selhurst Park and there's cheerleaders.
And there's also like weird Americanized graphics to everything, which I definitely think is part of VR AR for me, is like this weird, like the camera sails through a very poorly generated stadium and like, you know, you basically goes to the Jumbotron at the end of one of it. It's like, and next up, Nottingham Forest will play Liverpool at 4 o'clock.
But the reason we're characterizing these as bumps is because none of this challenged the assumed premise, which is
sure.
There's a thing happening over there and you're sitting from a distance and through our words and our pictures, we're going to bring you closer.
It felt curated. It feels presented and it doesn't feel as immersive, although I've got to admit, like I've maybe through my own imagination, and I'm not saying I'm exclusive. I think a lot of people who've got a great imagination can take themselves back to those moments. And, you know, TV is quite an immersive experience.
I mean, it's worth saying if you say Aguero versus QPR, people think of
Aguero. Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think of Steven Gerrard against Olympiacos. You're probably a little bit too young to remember that, but it's a famous piece of commentary from Andy Gray, I think it is. And it's like, you beauty. And like, as Gerrard like wheels away and like pumps his arms, even now I get like goosebumps thinking about it because I was so invested.
So if we're trying to characterize the television particularly, but radio, let's not forget, experience, you have to kind of conclude that the commentators in particular, but also when you look at old World Cups and they have the same hue,
mm-hmm.
that's gone out the game in the last 4 or 5 World Cups as TVs have become more standardized.
Yeah, right. And more globalized.
Yeah.
So there was a different market before. And like, for instance, we should talk about this just for a second. Did you know that the chat, you can't advertise games as being in, I think, HD or 4K unless it is lit by a certain number of lights and it is filmed on a certain level of camera. So you can't say it is HD without the standard of that being met. And UEFA is very stringent about that, as are the Premier League, as are other people. And it's quite fascinating because even if you look at the difference between what I do like about TV is obviously you can grade things. So grading is the process of, I mean, if you did it on film, you'd be developing the film and you would be putting the color and the contrast and all these kind of things into it, right? So you're basically working out how dark the image is, how colorful it is, how saturated it is. And what you never really think about, and what I always think about when I'm watching the Champions League is like, who graded that? Like, and I was lucky enough, we're going to run over our time already for the first segment one. I was lucky enough to go this season to BT Sports, like compound outside of Celtic Park for the Champions League. And I think I was probably the most annoying, as I often am, the most annoying tour participant ever. We met the director of the Champions League global feed for that night. And I remember just looking at this guy and just being like, you fucking badass. Like, look at you. You're a fucking rock star.
You're running the show.
I was, yeah. And he was exactly what I thought he would be. He was alpha number one. But his team were also incredibly smart. So I was asking him all these questions. He was like firing answers back to me. And anything he didn't know, he would sort of be like, we will find that out though. I will find that out. And I always think to myself, like, how does the Champions League basically have a standard look to it? And I don't mean standards in terrible. I mean, like, how is there a standardized high quality of picture that we have from the Champions League, right?
And we're so sensitive to that standard that when, like, the camera was a little bit high at White Hart Lane, we all go, ooh, that's
not, yeah, how different is it? I can't watch like this. Yeah. But that's kind of my point, is like, we've become conditioned to expect a certain level of football in the Premier League and a certain level of football in the Champions League, and anything below that, we're sort of taught, which is not true, is a lower standard. And it is obviously a lower standard maybe in terms of quality of broadcast, but you get what I mean.
Is there an inherently beneficial quality to variation though? Are we missing something?
But we're not told that is the case. What we're told is that the top standard is what is best, whereas actually I'm not 100% sure that's true, if that makes sense. So, but what we've done is we've then had those incremental bumps along the way, and grading and sound were a huge part of that. Now you can watch Sky Sports with surround sound, which is also incredibly immersive, and the mix will be different to the back in the old days. Obviously, it's just a mono speaker below a TV. Then we bring stereo in, so people are like, well, maybe we put the crowd a bit more this side or that side. And then after that, obviously you have surround sound, so the music would come out of your left speaker, which is next to your, you know, next to your right ear or whatever.
But the direction of travel, it's worth pointing out, is the closer you are, the better.
Right. Yeah. And I always felt, and I guess from a young age, like, I was always fascinated with graphics and insight and all those things. And I guess it's always been an interest of mine to work out how it's all packaged up. And a few years ago, like, obviously with developing the kickoff, I got to design some graphics or work with graphic designers. And in the beginning, it was quite basic because we weren't obviously working with a huge amount of money, but we were working with enough money that we got some graphic designers. It was quite flat. It was quite boxy, though that was quite trendy at the time. And as we slowly upgraded, it got better and better and better. What I was always fascinated by was like this idea that we were appearing on another screen alongside the actual experience of the game. And weirdly, like, we might even be a third screen. So there's the game, FIFA, or whatever they call EAFC now, Pro Evolution Soccer, or whatever the game is, and then us. Or not even the game, but us reacting to the game because someone couldn't find the feed, and FIFA. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, what they're doing in that room is similar to what you can now do on the Apple Vision Pro, right? You can lay out your windows as you see fit and kind of curate the information that feeds you the game and the sport and frames it for you. And there's a fascinating graphic in the actual presentation. I can't find the video online at the moment. I think it might have been sent out to just like specific media partners, but there is an amazing NFL and NBA graphic. And obviously, I think in the actual presentation, they show MLS because Apple have a deal with MLS, right? And so there is all this like, and for years I was working with graphics companies, should we say, developing our own graphics, but also looking at the things that they had. So they were incredibly proud of the fact that they could present an augmented reality within the TV screen. So like you would see, you know, back in the day, it would just be like a 2D sort of PNG that was laid over the screen. Now what you could do is you could walk inside the formation, or like you could do, you could move bits around and it would move on the screen. Now, AR takes that to another level. And curation of information and how we consume the game will be different. And Jamie and I are going to talk about that in the next segment.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
So coming back from this, I mean, that was literally just a whoosh in your ears. You were kind of saying, Jamie, like, it brought up a whole load of images in your mind. And I'm not saying, by the way, that Apple Vision Pro is a good thing. I think it is good. Like, I'm excited to try it. But I don't know if it's good in the sense of, like, is it best for football? But you were just talking about, like, all these people, like, on the last day of the season, like, laying out all the different windows of who goes up and who goes down, like, all these different global streams.
Look, it's a little bit of a mug's game to predict the good or bad of something that doesn't currently exist. The two obvious things, though, that shout out to me. One, there's a nostalgia always built into the specifics. So if you think about going to Blockbuster when you were a bit younger on a Friday, everyone has those memories of like, oh, and you'd pick out a DVD and you'd open the case, or a new textbook at school. It would smell a certain way.
Yeah.
My initial worry is always like, hang on, are we just killing all variation in a way that's going to be on paper the most effective, but maybe the least emotionally engaging?
So that's what I was trying to work out, right? Because at the moment, what you get is very similar to the broadcast experience. You get a baked-in score. The score is like, you can't move the score on your screen. You get ads that are integrated, and you get commentary, which is integrated, and you go to ad breaks, which are also integrated, right? So you basically get like what I would call it's pre-wrapped, right? And I kind of like that. Like when I watch American sports, I want that whole experience. Because so what I don't like about watching Sky Sports or NFL or NBA in the UK is I get the basketball, but I don't get the cultural bit that comes with it, the ads, all that stuff. I want that. I want to see how a local is consuming it.
And the more personalized the experience gets, the harder it is to have shared reference points.
Exactly. Now, there may be some shared reference points globally. I'm not 100% sure that globalization is always a good, I don't think it's ever a good thing, but I don't think it's always a good thing. That's not a xenophobic comment. That's just me saying I think globalization, whilst nice to experience other cultures, can also be inherently problematic because you're almost trying to standardize, and to a sense you get to homogeneity, which is not really what I like. Like, football is all about variation, surely, which we can talk about at another point. I guess what I'm saying is, like, with AR and VR, let's keep it AR. I mean, let's just say reality, augmented reality of some sort. Now what you can do is you will get a you will get the feed of the game with no score on it, potentially. You get to choose where the score goes, how big the score is. So, and that might be only exciting to me, but I guess in my mind, I feel like there's implications to that, right? First of all, you get more screen space, so you can see more of what is going on at the actual location, right? Secondly, not only that, but you get other pieces of information alongside that. So whilst watching, I've only seen the thing for MLS, NBA, NFL, you get a lineup along the right side that you can make bigger or smaller. You can see when players come in and out. Maybe you can see how far they've run. All these stats will suddenly, you can, I'm like whisking my hand around at the moment as I describe this. Like, if you imagine the screen there in front of me or in front of you there, you've got like a stat here and, you know, a timer there, and you decide what color it is. It's like customized to Wimbledon or Liverpool or whoever.
So there's two benefits that you've kind of outlined. The first is if you bin off the score, it's this thing, you're closer to the game. It's like you're there.
Sure.
Because when you're there, there's not a score. Mm-hmm. But if you're not so fussed about that and you want to see Alex McAllister's heat map.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Boom, up it comes.
The advantage of which is, oh, I can understand more about the game without the pundits telling me.
Right. So this is, and also I can go down my own map as to where I'm going. So say I get frustrated sometimes. So for instance, in the Gerrard years, Gerrard was always, sorry to use Liverpool as a reference, but you get my point. In the Gerrard years, Gerrard was always the focus of the commentary. He was Captain Fantastic, whatever it was. I was more interested in Xabi Alonso. I was interested in Momo Sissoko. I was interested in what, you know, Sami Hupia was doing during the game. Now you can kind of do that, if that makes sense. Like, not only with AR will you get like a baked feed that is there and ready for you, but you will also get maybe the opportunity to choose cameras. Maybe the opportunity to just go, I'm just going to go wide for the whole game. I just want to see what, you know, the coach up in the stands is seeing.
And it might also be interesting when it comes to football punditry, analytics, conversation. Because if I'm interested in doing a piece on Alexander-Arnold, mm-hmm. I might go, well, I'm just on Alexander-Arnold/Martinelli watch.
Right.
And every time they have a duel, I'm going to have
document that
updated
yeah.
in real time. So these narratives build in a way that you don't necessarily have access to.
Right. And that in itself is fascinating. Because, so, again, another really fascinating experience that I went on a few years ago with Adidas. I went to the MLS All-Star Game in Philadelphia. I think this was like 2013 or something like that. So I'm old. And at this game, they were premiering a piece of software that never really took off because the Nike players didn't want to wear it and nor did the other ones. But it was basically trackable, wearable kits, kind of the thing that everyone uses in training now to like track metrics, but more to track like heat map, movement of players, touch on the ball, those kind of things. And you could watch it live on a website that if you were at the stadium, you could log in and see heat maps, all these kind of things. The fear within the league, obviously it was a huge marketing piece, right? And it was cool, like to be there and be like, oh my God, like I'm at the All-Star game and I can see Dwayne Di Rosario's heat map. Within that, there was also inherently built in that the players were like, well, I don't want this because if you're watching the game live and you're in the stadium and you can hit and you can like see I'm not doing well or that I've lost 3 duels in a row, are you going to start saying to the coach, like sub him off or whatever? Is that going to lead to like a democratization of the way that football is played? Because one fan in the stadium, so one fan in the cop going, hold on a minute, that guy's lost 4 duels in a row and he's had a terrible game. What now? Like, then everyone else goes, wait a minute, is he having a bad game? Yeah, he's having a bad game. Well, we better do they get behind him? Do they get on his back? I suppose it depends on fan bases, right?
Such an interesting question.
It is a bit like inherently, I'm saying the technology augments our understanding, but there is an inherently human reaction to what is going on with that understanding. And sometimes like, you know, galaxy braining football does not always help you.
No, and also if you're assuming that you're 1-0 down at home and there's a lot of anger, do you really need everyone armed with the fact that you've lost 2 out of 3 defensive duels in the last 10 minutes?
Right, yeah. Do you really want that? But that's going to be the case on these kind of things. Like, I get it. There's people like me at the moment who obviously watch with like SofaScore open and I'm trying to look at heat maps and I'm trying to look at, not that I feel like I'm particularly, you know, well armed, but I'm interested.
Yeah, it's sort of on this. Like, there's a few chess streamers who have their heart rate
right
on the screen.
I did that for a few poker games, actually, and it's really unpleasant knowing that people might see your physical reaction.
This is what I'm thinking. I mean, imagine if you're looking at the European Cup final and Edison's heart rate to kick off is through the roof.
Yeah.
That's one of the pieces of information you'd quite like to have private.
You would quite, and at the same time, I want, you know, obviously I don't think they're going to, what I'm saying is like, so there's an element of stuff where what I find interesting is sometimes like really good pundits or really good people, not me, but really good pundits do this like really insightful piece. And some people leave in the comments like, why are you laying this out? Like the opposition will know this now. And I'm like, yeah, if you're in the Premier League, you know how good Jordan Henderson is at, you know, defending, but you know how bad he is at X, or bad example. But you get my point. Like, you're like, you know, but you don't know how fast a player's heart is beating or XYZ. Do you know what I mean?
I think Spotify, with their like yearly roundup of your personal stats, have kind of proved that there's an insatiable, basically, appetite for statistics about yourself and your favorite football team. I think if AR, VR takes us into the space of, you can now work out how Jordan Henderson's breakfast is digesting, I think everyone will lap it up. I think the players might be reserved about the fact that the cop are now aware of the fact they ate one too many blueberries at breakfast, but the fans are going to be buzzing off it.
I think some will and I think some won't. I think almost like similar to the Terminator film or any future thing, right? Like, there's always that guy that's like, hold on a minute, is this the right way? Are we degrading human relations? Because to an extent, you're not missing the point, but I guess, and we're talking about two separate things here almost, like we're talking about in-stadium experience. I'm talking about AR, VR. We'll be able to sit at home and essentially like have that experience. You can lay out as many stats as you like and still have the game front and center, but everything else can be around it. And to an extent, it will also change what broadcasters need to do. So a broadcaster will no longer go, you're seeing this on screen, although obviously they'll have to standardize it for broadcast and for AR. They'll say, oh, the stats that are coming up right now are, you know, X. And in AR, you could probably just get rid of those if you don't want them.
I mean, what you're doing really is allowing for customization. But with that said, what you're really doing, in a less superficial way, is you're going to have an increasingly informed footballing public.
Right. And therefore, like, vernacular changes, all these kind of things.
Totally. I mean, I think tactics weren't, it sounds bizarre to say now, but tactics, shapes, pressing, diamonds, triangles, false nines, blah, 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 blah. These weren't popular topics 15 years ago.
No.
I can imagine the exact same thing happening in 15 years' time, where it's like, God, remember when you used to watch football? And if the commentator didn't point something out, you wouldn't know it was happening.
Because, yeah, you were used to having it presented to you. It's become a lot more of an interactive experience, right? And that's, I guess, what I'm interested in is I love the idea that someone can completely curate their own consumption of football. I think that's inherently really interesting. I also think there is then this immersive experience that Apple also kind of premiered, where it was like what they showed, which they didn't really show to do with sports, but they showed it with, like, you know, if you're watching something that's set on the moon, you could make your whole room the moon. Do you know what I mean? So it would basically, it blocks out everything in that room. And then you've got that. You could have the same. So say you're a Liverpool fan, or say, okay, do Manchester United, right? So you're a Manchester United fan. It wouldn't be all that hard to map the stadium and then for the fans to then pick a season ticket in whatever part of the stadium they want to watch from. And then everyone's voice and reaction can either be streamed inside or sort of to a AR stadium where you then all interact.
And then
in the cloud.
And then that becomes a revenue stream for Man United.
Right.
Because now they'll say, well, we sold 53,000 season tickets and 719,000 virtual season tickets.
Yeah. And you know, first of all, fantastic for people who are less able to get to the games. So for instance, geography might get in your way. You know, you might not be able to walk, or you might have trouble traveling.
And it costs a fortune.
And it costs a lot of money, yeah. But, you know, fantastic for people who can't go to the games. Possibly also fantastic for, like, you know, people with kids who just want to, who can't go, or those kind of things. There are loads of different good or, you know, perceived goods around that, right?
It's also interesting how expectations adjust. Like, I can't remember who first told the story, but there was this story of this guy was sitting on the plane, and it was like the first flight that they had Wi-Fi on the plane. And everyone thought that was amazing, and the guy next to him was so excited. And half an hour later, the guy was going, this is so shit. This is so slow. It's like, hang on, half an hour ago, this didn't exist.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see where it goes when it comes to like the AR and VR of football broadcasting.
The complete lack of gratitude and again, it is like the application, medium is the message, all these kind of things, right? I get what you're saying. And then I think on top of that, like, it's the fact that this will create other, it will widen the fan base again. So it could be interesting to see globally who benefits most from it, because again, I wonder if it to an extent, it gives more stratosphere to the guys at the top. Like, those guys become more rarefied up there because their stadiums are AR stadiums. You know, their experience is more premium because they've got the best software programmers. You can consume it exclusively through Man City's app or whatever.
And more to the point, Man City now have a million season ticket holders virtually. So you're now going to have this revenue split. And this is, by the way, just another way in which, and I'm not even trying to say good or bad here, but the rich get richer when it comes to football.
Right.
As you diversify technology and revenue streams diversify, of course the revenue is a function of popularity.
And that's part of it, right? And I guess, you know, globally, people can then grow their fan bases through that. You know, people can have avatars that are inside the stadium. You could be in the director's box and pay to be in that director's box. You could experience the game with, weirdly, Steve Aoki. Or, you know, you could have a DJ in the stadium at that time. There could even be, and this is kind of what I want to get onto in our next segment, a point where the sound from the AR stadium is piped into the real stadium as like live fan feedback.
To me, that's the dog wagging the tail wagging the dog even.
Right.
Because you're ending up building a virtual thing to replicate the real thing.
But then you get what I'm saying though, like there is like this, that feels almost dystopian. Like it's where their experience verges onto the real experience, begins to inhibit what is going on there, or where people go, I'm just not going to go to the stadium. I'm just going to stay at home and do it in AR.
Well, it is interesting as to whether an AR stadium actually makes going even more special, because this is the thing we're all used to replicating. Now here's the real version, or whether it goes the other way. And it's like, hang on, we had essentially the same experience.
Rubber band experience almost, where it's like it goes very far one way, where everyone's like, wow, I can do this for a little while, and then kind of snaps back. I would imagine a lot of people who've got the season tickets, because you're also getting rid of a lot of the match day experience that way. Like, you're not walking into, maybe you'll be able to walk into the stadium on VR AR, but you're not actually walking in. You know, you don't have to meet your friends, all these kind of things.
It sounds a little bit abstract, but most meaningful things, then they're emergent. It's not that going to the game is meaningful. It's walking to the ground and the water to the game is meaningful.
Yeah, having a hot dog or the burger or the bad thing that you have at the stadium every week.
Right, so as you streamline these experiences, it seems obvious that there'll be some approximation of the real thing, but they might actually serve to just refocus on why the real thing is so good.
And that's a good point for us to get into part three, which is talking about almost the overextension of this as a concept. And that, to an extent, I'm very excited about this segment.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I watch too much Black Mirror, and I'm going to let you take the lead on this.
Okay, so Black Mirror is the dystopian future, or a dystopian idea of where technology, the future of humankind goes, right? And I think broadly, like, obviously there is a huge inhibitor for Apple's product, which has been spoken about at great length. You know, it's $3,500, probably £3,500. And, you know, that therefore is limited to a very small set of people. Steve Jobs's idea of it's probably very different. I mean, Steve Jobs is dead now, but you know, the Apple idea is very different to the Meta idea. Meta are trying to be a bit more affordable. Maybe there is some like software that spans both of them, you get a lower grade of footage or something on the cheaper version.
I mean, how much does an iPhone 2 cost now? It's 25 quid second hand.
Sure.
These things become cheaper over time.
Yeah, and I'd imagine Apple are going to do like a Vision SE or something where it's like, you know, just because it is cheaper, but the screens are less good inside it or something like that. You know?
The version that's come out now will be like laughably poor quality and laughably cheap in a decade.
That's so interesting. I kind of relate to that. And I also think laughably cheap is a really good one. It, you know, obviously we're a long time ahead of where we are, but I think it will also open up a whole new market for a lot of clubs. I think, again, it is more people at a rich end of the scale who will consume it like this. But I think it will also help a lot of broadcasts. I think it is going to be a bit of a jump, and I think it is the future of where we are going to go in terms of media consumption.
It also just makes the point that marketing and packaging is only getting more and more important when it comes to sports. And we're not going to do Wrexham today, but Wrexham as a package, as a consumable product, is quite a different thing to watching them play 3-5-2 with Ollie Palmer and Paul Brennan up front.
Right.
And the more places we can hit, and in more engaging ways, the more important that becomes. Which is just another way of saying, like, your football's marketing team is only going to become more important as time goes on.
Absolutely. And where marketing goes, what marketing thinks it is, and how far marketing kind of reaches or overreaches. There's been this fascinating chat over the last week about, you know, the Jude Bellingham transfer, the Declan Rice transfer, the, you know, insert Messi going to Inter Miami. And everyone's like, congratulations, Adidas. You nailed it. I'm like, the extent to which Adidas influenced Jude Bellingham going to Real Madrid is minuscule, and the same probably for Declan Rice. But they did have involvement with Messi. I think from day one they wanted him to go to MLS, but that doesn't mean that Messi went, I'm sorry, Adidas, where do you want me to go?
No, but how many people have you heard talk about where Messi's going to play in the Inter Miami side? And the answer is like zero.
Correct.
Because, Messi is maybe a little bit of a unique case, but I think we're just accepting more and more that football is as much about the consumption and packaging as it is the game.
And that packaging excites me. I feel like it's something that I'm good at it. I really enjoy like packaging football, if that makes sense, and like the narratives and those kind of things. I think narratives will massively evolve around football, mainly because I think what's interesting right now is obviously, so through television, the limitation that I probably should have pointed out before was you were getting a broadcast from a central point that was then going to your point. So it all still came from, Crystal Palace or wherever. The signal comes out of the tower and into your television box or into your television, into your aerial, into the television, right? So it's still being done from a central point. What changed through phones and through everything else was you were then able to render things, as they call it in the business, client side. So what you can now do, which isn't a common practice, but I think will become more common practice through AR, is you will still have your central broadcast. And because of the speed of the internet, you'll be able to have more broadcasts. So you might be able to pick more angles. You might have choice of whether you watch someone's vision mix or whether it's done to where your eyes are looking and like the camera goes there sort of thing. But there'll be a lot more rendered stuff on client side. So it'll be like ads will be rendered on our side. They won't be put from one central point. They will become bespoke to us. So the Super Bowl at the moment, this is my point, is all rendered their side and then sent to us. They go, here's a great ad just for you as a mass audience. Now it's like, cool, you like Sprite? I'm going to market some Fanta to you. Do you know what I mean?
That is such a big point at the moment.
It's a huge point, Jamie.
At the moment, the advertising is like, well, they've bid for this advertising slot because they reckon the demographic is X to Y.
Can I blow your mind?
Go on.
At the moment, they already replaced the boards around the Premier League grounds with, I guess, what is augmented reality. So adverts for that part of the world.
Whoa, so if you're watching a game in South Korea, the side ads.
I think it's limited to certain countries, sure. But basically, especially in South Korea, I'd imagine, because they're incredibly technologically advanced and they have an audience that already spend.
The interesting thing, though, too, is like we're all used to personalized ads on Instagram or Facebook. But yeah, halftime, It's like the perfect.
What then?
Yeah.
Like, you've not only do you have your Instagram feed there, which, by the way, because everything is then all linked together, your Instagram feed could then be, this is, by the way, doesn't sound dystopian, this sounds amazing. Your Instagram feed to the left of the actual game, right? That Instagram feed is taking information from the game and saying, ah, you would like to be served information, not just about football, but specifically about this game at this point in this time. Here are, your match day program is no longer what you read on the terraces in a small booklet. Your match day program is basically Instagram, Twitter, and what, and TikTok or whatever else being curated for you as the game goes on. Ah, Jurgen Klopp just made this substitute. Up pops Instagram. Here's a quote that I just rendered for you about Jurgen Klopp talking about how tired Roberto Firmino is. Oh, he's tired? Oh, right. Didn't even rely on the commentator then to give you that narrative. You were then doing that yourself.
And it's not impossible to imagine your matchday program becoming a Lawrence-specific matchday digest.
Exactly.
Which is all the best from The Athletic and TikTok, personalized for you. Which, look,
20 links that you're going to love.
And there's a clear pro and con. The pro is, like, the content's more relevant for you. The con is you lack the cultural shared reference points.
And that's kind of it. It's like, we I think social media weirdly is like almost being left behind for this like Web 3.0 thing, which is kind of like integrated social media in the first place. But it's kind of interesting to think, like, I might even be able to, on match day, say to my own AR or VR app, I'm not even saying it's Apple that are doing this. It might be an app on the AR and the VR that I go, summarize that Athletic article for me in 2-3 sentences. And then the AR, or it was AI, but the AI within the AR then goes, cool, the basic point that David Ornstein is making is Liverpool need to play 3 at the back. And I don't have to read 50, you know, 1,000 words from David Ornstein. Not that I don't love that, but I, you know what I mean.
Jesus, it's obvious what the incentives are for the club as well. Like, the revenue, the product becomes so much more engaging.
Well, that's what's part of that whole Ready Player One thing, right? Like, a lot of people have compared Apple's Ready Player One to this. They've basically gone, look, you know, we can sell 99% of the screen space to ads or whatever it is, and you have just have to pay to get rid of the ads.
Yeah, like the ultimate microtransaction,
yeah,
platform.
Want to get rid of an ad? Get rid of it here.
Want that replay again?
Sure. You can also then tell them how many more replays you want, whether you want to focus on a play. You could probably have replays played in a second screen alongside the actual feed of the actual stadium.
And you have your standard settings.
Exactly.
So in the same way people will have like their standard, I don't know, volume they like on the TV, mm-hmm. You'll now just have, oh, you go 2 replays. That's so funny. I go 3.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, and then not only that, but it's like, oh, I don't even watch the get, like, that's my smallest screen is the live feed. My biggest thing is actually I'm scrolling through whatever.
The other thing to mention is, let's say you have, like, I don't know, Jordan Henderson with a little camera on his chest. Maybe we can have Henderson POV.
So this is going to take me to the final subject, and I want to talk about this. I'm going to go to a part 4 here just because I think this is particularly interesting. After this, whoosh, I think I might upset you.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
They've just approved human testing for, this is now beyond the Apple thing. I'm actually not 100% against the Apple thing, though I think prohibitively what you could say is the issue with the Apple thing is, can you really see 2 friends sitting down in the same location and both wearing a headset? Maybe at a push, maybe it becomes a bit more normalized.
Feels a bit weird for now.
Feels a bit weird for now, but maybe in time. Do you know what I mean? Or if, I thought my best friend lives like 2-3 hours away.
The other side of that though is that if your best friend lives 2-3 hours away, you both put it on.
And you can be in the same place.
Yeah.
Which I love. I think that'd be great. But at the same time, still limited. I'd rather, I like the effort that someone makes to come and see you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I like that you come here to do the podcast. We don't do it over whatever.
Yeah, this wouldn't be nearly as fun as an exercise if I was in my bedroom.
Absolutely. Yeah, because your energy is not the same. Like, I like you pacing around my office before we do the podcast, those kind of things.
ADHD.
Yeah, but like in a nice way, and we can sort of dial into each other's energy, those kind of things. That makes
sense. And I think that's kind of the overarching point here. This stuff's really cool, and for the clubs, it's awesome, and for the consumer, in so many ways, it's awesome. And it kind of feels naff to say at this stage, because it kind of reduces to the same point. But you clearly lose stuff. And it's like, you know, meetings, or you, rather than going to the pub, you can just stick a headset on.
Right.
I mean, it's such a ridiculous point, but like, so I'm just turned 26, and my friends with siblings 2 or 3 years younger, they didn't get together to play Call of Duty. They played Call of Duty from their headsets.
In the bedroom.
Yeah, and even though we were 2 years older and 16, we'd still go, oh, you kids, you're missing out on the... Which was the same argument that our parents made to us because we weren't
right
outside playing football or whatever it is.
So this leads on to the horrible or amazing dystopian future. When I was at university, which is a while ago now.
1882.
There was a... that I was really fascinated. And at the time, I think it's still kind of ahead of its time. I wasn't ahead of it this time, the writing was. There was something called a body without parts. It spoke about how technology was making humans more and more as if they were making up a body of like people, like a hive mind almost, or like a hive liver or hive whatever. And obviously no one makes up a hive liver, but the point is like it spoke about it was Deleuze and Guattari, I think was the name of the two theorists who came up with it. And this is what I wanted to get onto, because I kind of wanted to like go as far as I could down the road, at least mentally. I'm sure someone can go way further than me. And they spoke about the flow of information freely between people will become more and more so. Not necessarily that it's a good thing, but the information, you know, about history will become way easier for you and I to access if we have like one of those chips in our mind, or we're linked through our fingers or whatever it is. And like, however, the technology almost doesn't matter. It does, but it doesn't.
The idea that there's a collective space of information which can be downloaded.
Yeah, and a collective... like a collective area where we can all get it from, and to an extent that we're all feeding into it, and then that feedback is like, the feedback is almost constant. It's like there's one big feedback loop.
Which is interesting, because you've just described how language models like ChatGPT work, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. And ChatGPT is like a very crude version of that, right? Take it a step further. And that's where your Jordan Henderson thing is interesting. So at the moment we're like, cool, I can put a camera on Jordan Henderson's chest and I can see roughly what he sees. Now imagine that it's no longer physical at all. And what we're watching, which by the way, I think is also a really cool thing about this VR AR thing. You know, at the bottom of your FIFA screen, you have the little map. The little map that you have on FIFA where the ball goes like far. I think in the very near future, when you watch, you'll be able to like watch that map.
Oh, the micro map.
The little micro map. Yeah. And you'll be able to watch that alongside the game. So you get like an idea almost tactically of where the people are on the field.
Yeah. And like, it could be interesting just thinking about the mini map, because you'll have had the experience of going to a game and you're like 90 yards away, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, obviously you should have played that pass.
Yeah, right.
That mini map is going to be inspiring quite a lot of
that,
which is awesome.
And that's kind of interesting in the first place, because actually, even if you go on the NBA app at the moment, you can actually see they have like very, it's not even crude, it's actually really smart AI technology talking about how good the shot, how good a chance they have of the shot going in if they shoot from that position or from wherever they are in the, where the most likely place they're going to pass it is, all these kind of things. And it even shows like the routes on the floor and the shot map over their head and all these kind of things. So the NBA app is a long time ahead of the Premier League. And I've kind of gone off on a tangent, but these kind of overlays will also become more and more common in football. Like in the future, today you and I might struggle to explain in a video, why is Virgil van Dijk's drop-off so bleak? Why is it so quick in the Liverpool team? Now, obviously he lost with the Netherlands the other night as well, but...
But we're using our eyes to make fairly crude statements,
right,
based overly heavily on one or two examples.
And the eye test, right?
Yeah, right. That's, yeah. Yeah.
Now imagine the eye test, but with lines overlaid in real time, where basically the second that Konate wanders out of, you know, touch distance of Virgil van Dijk, it goes critical distance between Virgil van Dijk and Konate, high chance of, you know, defensive lapse. That watching experience, in the same way as like a heat map for a player or a, you know, a low amount of take-ons, completely change how we watch the sport.
Yeah, because you know when you're, you know when you're watching football and there's half a moment where you think, now, like it, there's a chance.
Go!
There.
And above it, like, you know, in similar to the way you're playing NBA 2K or whatever it is, when you hit the perfect shot, it goes like green.
Yeah.
You go, it goes, green is the time to pass. And he doesn't pass then.
Well, this is a new tech, but it's kind of also old tech. Because I remember playing on the World Cup 2010 game, mm-hmm. like be a pro. Mm-hmm. You could like be a player. And if you wandered out of position, you could see your rating drop in real time.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You weren't in the optimum zone.
Yeah.
I can totally imagine that. I mean, to throw it back to, I think, it would have been George Graham at Arsenal. You used to have bungee jumps between the back.
Bungee ropes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, now, I mean, we're talking about the broadcasting experience. But imagine now watching that back and training as players and going, forget the bungee ropes. My watch is beeping.
Exactly.
Training because my body shape is too square.
Yeah. Bang. And I mean, you know, that's, and not only that, but a coach could be watching training through VR and AR and just instead of being out there watching with the eye test and seeing, oh, that guy's sweating quite a bit or like whatever. It's like, oh, your heart rate's, at the moment, people even manage a load on a body like that. They go, hey, load management, like, we're not going to play you this weekend because you're too tired according to the tech.
Which is cutting edge injury management.
Yes. So now imagine that with shape, with not only that, but so it's not only a computer telling you, well, this is the proximity between the players, which by the way, is what they do at the moment. Like I can't remember which manager it is, but he revolutionized it by bringing in drones and all sorts of things. And he would watch training, not on the sideline, but from a screen where he's going, shape-wise, we need to change this.
Well, there's two things here. One is Sam Allardyce actually used to sit in the dugout briefly.
Right.
Because he went to go play soccer in the States.
Yeah. And then he'd go and sit up in the stands.
So, yeah, so he... it's Sam Allardyce is a personal sort of misunderstood favourite of mine.
100%
so
agree.
A shout-out to him there. But the second thing is, I'm kind of comforted by the idea that you're still going to have different opinions.
Yeah.
Because you can read the stats two ways.
Ah, but now this is what's interesting, right? So on top of that, and you know, obviously this is maybe, it's probably not that far off, but it feels years off in terms of consumer tech. I think for like proprietary stuff, you'll probably be able to get it relatively quickly. But I think consumer tech, it's probably a while off, probably because clubs wouldn't want consumers to have that level of understanding of their game. Like if you, so we'll go down this road. We might even have to have a part five here because I've not even gone to the thing I wanted to get to. A coach could put a model of how they want their players to play in, and their coaches, without having to have that expressed from the coach to them, could then watch and go, you're wandering outside of the model, stick to the model. So the coach is no longer just the person and the expression of the ideas and the way that Pep Guardiola came into Man City and changed the culture. It is then a piece of software that is written by someone.
He's
that
the algorithm builder.
Right.
So what you have...
Exactly. He's the architect.
So you have the architect who says it in words. It's Pep saying, Rodri, you need to stay between there and there.
Right.
And now his equivalent of Carlos Queiroz is some software dude.
Is Al AR. Is Al I.
Yeah, right. And like the thing about Carlos Queiroz is before United hosted Barcelona, Paul Scholes scored the winner in 2008 to get them through to the final in Moscow. He had Mats.
Yeah.
Jim Mats. And said, Michael Carrick, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Scholes, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is such a natural progression.
Exactly. And on top of that, again, you will then be able to bring in coaches who are not, I repeat, not at the training ground. So if you have a specialist who lives in Japan that specializes in X, you know, whatever. Wow, that person can suddenly watch your training and in real time give feedback as if they were there in that place. That probably already happens,
and,
by the way. But you have
and adjust the algorithm.
Mm-hmm. And go, if you change that player's position by 10% and their body is then 10 degrees that way, what then?
And think about opposition prep. Because if you say Martinelli goes really wide when Xhaka gets the ball, you can then start simulating for that scenario.
Exactly.
And the criteria of when your watch goes green or red is adjusted for Martinelli mode.
Correct.
When you're doing Saka mode and you want, I don't know, you want Declan Rice, which is slightly early, to drop in. Oh, very interesting. What you end up having, I think, is quite a polarizing divide in football where like football on the one hand, but so people talk about basketball,
mm-hmm.
prison basketball is a hell of a lot different in terms of rules.
Of course.
To middle school basketball.
Yeah, right.
But they're the same rules, but they're different rules.
Yeah.
I wonder if, I don't know, the conference south ends up feeling and looking more and more and more and more different to the Premier League.
Yeah.
On the basis that the tech isn't even distributed.
Well, at that point, not only is the tech distribution different, but also the idea of what the game is based on instinct and all these kind of things. If you are able to hone your instinct for a week before the game because you've over and over again run a model of what Mo Salah's going to do, that changes what you are able to then do in the game. It's not about you reading in real time and working it out. You've been coached this. It's just the level of the granular level to which you can go is so much more.
And like all of this is just an extension of what we're already doing. I mean, right. I've heard Guardiola, because they won the treble, be described in the last week from 10 different places as, it's so weird. He predicts what's going to happen.
Right.
So now you just have, I don't know, overlaid. I mean, where it becomes really interesting is where you get algorithms that can start predicting tactical setups that work and don't.
Right. And then we'll also adjust during the game and offer suggestions. Part of me wonders, in a similar way to the way that social media goes, whether maybe in a similar to the way that Formula One teams and Formula E teams and all these teams are given limitations on what tools they can use and the chassis of the car, whether there will become a limitation at some level as to what you can do. And in order to almost keep the game human, because at the moment, drivers pre-drive can basically get in a simulator and simulate. If you have the same with footballers for a week, what then? And how meta does it go? Because the players then go, they've simulated me for a week. What if I practice X? Do you know what I mean?
Well, so here I think we're okay. And the reason we're okay is because footballers are different enough.
Right.
Like, just, you're never going to get a homogeneous playing styles just because what constitutes an effective playing style depends on the footballers you have.
And globally where you are. For instance, like there's positionalism versus relationism in football, right? And in South America at the moment, the guys who are doing particularly well, I've very, very much only just like browsed a video about this, but there's a very popular coach down there who may be the next Brazil coach. He overloads parts of the field that you would just never overload in Europe. And players like really gravitate to, you know, eight people will be in like a quarter of the pitch. You just wouldn't, like, maybe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was ahead of his time, but you just wouldn't do that in European football.
So that's where the tech doesn't scare me. I mean, the reference point that comes to mind is, I'll bring it up again, with chess, the computer engines are so powerful now that, like, opening theory,
right,
there are just some openings, like the first two moves each, which are effectively offers of a draw.
Right.
And now a handshake
mm-hmm.
because the games have been so telegraphed.
Right.
I think football's safe there.
Okay. There is something in that book, which is the, you know, the book that I gave you from Rick Rubin, the creative act. Yeah. He speaks about how there's a game called Go in China.
Yeah.
And how, in Go, basically there were loads of people who had lots of received knowledge and were taught Go from a very young age. They were Go masters. I think it's Go, right?
Go, yeah.
Something like that. And AI was given Go and like, you know, see what you can do with it, right? And it started to make moves that no Go master would make. And I think a Go master was like reduced to basically he retired because the machine beat him.
Yeah. And Go basically, for anyone listening who isn't familiar with it, has like an unreasonable number of potential moves.
Yeah.
It's not like chess where you can just run it through a powerful computer. Go has more potential moves in the first 10 moves than the atoms in the universe.
Right.
So that left a lot of room for something like AI to come in and do things that were totally counterintuitive. And I see where you're going here. It's like, well, what's the footballing equivalent?
What is the footballing equivalent with this? How soon will we basically get someone who is, you know, I mean, to an extent, we still need people who can motivate players and those kind of things. But what if we don't?
But it's not that much. Well, so I think, again, football's basically safe here. But there is this open question of, if you tell it, I like having space with three players against two.
Generate that.
Generate scenarios where Alexander-Arnold has the ball and assume the following pressing setup in the following shape.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we only invented the square in football like this year. Previously, we hadn't moved past the triangle. And now we're like, right. Oh, midfield cubes.
Right, that works.
That works. But it kind of worked in a way that we, like, of course it worked because we just figured it out.
So that leads me on to the kind of the final section. I said we wanted to do three on this. We've ended up with five. This final section, I really want to get your thoughts on.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Right, so a second ago, I was speaking about Deleuze and Guattari, right, who are two social theorists who were kind of fascinated, not in a human centipede type sort of way, but in the sense of linking up the human bodies and linking up human experience to make a collective, which they believed was kind of not godlike, but kind of, you know, was fusing your experience to other human beings. And they spoke about, I've not done the research. It was a body without parts or something like that, right? And it was a seamless flow of energy and information between people. And that's what I was getting onto before we went back to how AI would impact things and how AR would also help that, because it would help you physically experience it. Now, only this week we've seen, over the past few weeks, we've seen that they've approved human testing for the chips that Elon Musk wants to put in people's heads, which means that you can essentially now tap into people's instinct. And, you know, the further we go with it, the more you'll be able to map the mind, right? With that, what if we weren't to take the cue from AR and VR and AI, but it was to go the other way? And this was such a complex technological system that it could interpret human emotions, reactions, all those kind of things in real time and fuse them all into almost one democratic decision. So none of it is out on the field. All of this is done through AR. And in an almost collective-like pro clubs, you could play a football match with a million people. But let me just lay this out for you, right? So go with me. This isn't a physical thing, though I'd imagine in the end you could make it physical because robots can keep up with you, right? It's all rendered in a FIFA or EAFC-like experience. And what they always say is like, hey, you know, when I go to Crystal Palace, I'm like, hey, the fans here really get football. Do you know what I mean? Like, the football understanding here is really good. And, you know, then the Real Madrid fan experience generally from me has been there are people in the world who have relatively little understanding of football, but they know they want to watch the best of the best. And then at Liverpool, I'm always like, there's got to be some sort of like holistic impact that this fan group is having on the game, right? Like all the people within Old Trafford, all the people within the Etihad, all the people within Anfield, their collective mind must in some way be interacting and reacting with the players.
Yeah, like you can make that quite grounded by just saying if everyone groans every time you take a corner short.
Right.
The fact that you don't like corners being taken short has some kind of impact on the emotional incentive of the players to take a corner short.
Right. So now imagine you have a VR or AR headset on and you're dialed in with your little chip at the back of the brain, right? And it knows, and you can basically go before the game, all right, let's take a Premier League team and make it, you know, incredible. Like, so say it is Liverpool. This game, I want to see it from Trent Alexander-Arnold's experience. But when I think, I kick that with my right foot. AR in real time is dialed in a great enough sense that it goes, right, what's the majority decision here? Outside of the foot, right foot, kick. It then does it because the majority of people watching from that position are thinking that idea that this hive mind is able to say, oh, the game goes this way. And so you can almost pit like 100,000 people against 100,000 people who are Liverpool fans against Man City fans. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. There's kind of two conversations. The first is the more interesting one is just to assume that works and it's possible.
Yeah. Assume that.
It is interesting. I mean, I remember Theo Walcott scoring a goal against Sweden in the 2012 Euros, and I screamed at the TV, get it wide, mm-hmm. as he then ignores Jamie and puts it into the top corner.
Right.
And there would be something very interesting to see how sound are the collective instincts of fan bases. I mean, the one
very
that comes to mind
bad sound.
Is you have no... Football is all about stringing moves together and a coherence. And I know, again, that when you have chess streamers who play against their chat on Twitch, the most commonly done move will go against them. But what you end up happening is the one move the hive mind, in this case, makes, has no relationship with the second one.
Right.
So one plan was press high, and we've done that. The other plan is drop off. So I think if you were the 100,000 versus 100,000, half the time you'd be pressing up the pitch.
Right.
Half the time you'd be dropping off.
But what if that was like coordinated in some fashion and you could kind of coordinate it? So pre-match, there was like a agreed set of tactics that you could almost not go against, but like...
Right, so you could limit the options either practically or essentially.
And the AI made decisions based on what you laid out as some kind of framework.
Right, so the algorithm wouldn't just be the most done decision. It would be a combination between the most done decision and the thing that is the most aligned with the pre-agreed strategy.
Right.
So when you add that clause, I think it becomes very, very interesting. I mean, as it happens, football, I think, is a game, which, and this is why like Jude Bellingham is signed for Real Madrid and Jude Bellingham is signed for Sunderland. Mm-hmm. It's in the margins. It's how quick are you off your left? How quick are you off your right? And that's where I think it's too dynamic for this model to run.
It's almost another game, isn't it?
Yeah, because kick it with your right foot is less the decision as opposed to, do you just have a feel for the weight of pass?
But that could also be the case, like how quickly can you get to consensus? How quickly, there will be different judges as to how well your team play, if that makes sense. So decision making and the speed of decision making and judgment of all those things, I'm just saying, like, the democratization of that, it's unhuman. But it's interesting that it happened.
It raises a couple of really interesting questions around what constitutes football instinct. So, like, going down to Crystal Palace, and I've been to Palace, and I've also had a sense, albeit from the away end, of these are football people, they get it. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the degree to which that's predictive of a team that would be successful. And whether if you went to Real Madrid to use them as an example of perhaps like people who are more willing to be entertained than involved. That's an interesting question. As it happens, I think the margins between Modric and Kovacic are like some undescribable feel for a weight of pass. And that's where I think this model ends up being limited for something like football. Baseball, though.
Sure.
I'm a little bit more open-minded with.
Well, I guess the issue with football and baseball is quite limited impact and outcome. So it's like, you know, there's going to be a ball going towards the plate and that then gets struck, right? That's, or they tried to strike.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Whereas in football, Andy Robertson pressing nice and high in the Champions League final
can have a billion different outcomes.
Football is like chaos theory in as far as like, it's quite butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
Tifo did a video on why Martinez taking a goal kick 2 yards to De Gea helped beat Arsenal's press.
Right.
And the idea was, well, if David De Gea took it, the first pass would split the pitch into two and Arsenal would press that bit. Whereas Martinez passing at 2 yards keeps the pitch nice and open.
Right.
That level of dynamism, and forgive my ignorance, baseball fans, if this exists in baseball, doesn't seem possible there quite.
It's more limited.
There's less moving parts. Like,
but, I mean, maybe there'll be someone who come in and can't, maybe like I'm just wondering, maybe the collective gets beyond a point where you can't, there's diminishing returns, if that makes sense. So once you get past like, I also think it'd be interesting because obviously Crystal Palace don't have as many fans as Liverpool, or Liverpool don't have, you know, Liverpool obviously don't have as many fans as Man City. They're the biggest global team. We all know that as a fact. But the point is like, you know, if 100,000 people are against 2 million people, what's the likelihood that within those 2 million, there's as many people who are good at making football decisions as in the 1,000 people from Wimbledon?
Well, the answer is, why are there more? And if the answer has anything to do with popularity, entertainment, or success, you're not selecting for the most potent decision-making criteria.
So have I then created a whole other sport? I mean,
you've created a sport where you really want the most experienced and analytical footballing fans, which basically means on average, you're wanting people, you're not filtering for people who want to be entertained.
Wow.
So, which is why the bigger the club, the worse the decision making. Not because there aren't millions of brilliant minds who follow those teams.
Mm.
It's just there are also people who very validly just want to be entertained. So you want to go watch West Bromwich Albion because no one's been entertained at the Hawthorns
right.
for decades.
For decades.
So who's turning up every week? People who have some other appeal.
Right. And also enjoy the social experience, which I'm kind of missing. I'm talking about creating a whole other sport and collective experience here, which is not. And that's where I think people think, and this is what's interesting, right? What's the 1992 decision made with us where Sky took over, or Sky and the Premier League took it somewhere else, was they took the word football and they pejorized it, but we didn't realize how much they were changing the game at that point. So in my mind, I just went, well, football just keeps going. And I hadn't thought that this wasn't football. But I've come up with a whole other game and just called it football. And there may be people who brand, and that's why where your point comes in about branding, right? If you still brand it as football, people go, oh, it's football. But broadly, your experience of that football will be different to the football that I'm watching today.
And it's worth saying, your game, I think, would be a super fascinating exercise if you adjusted for all of these dynamics and did something like AI Football Manager.
Yeah, right.
Right, so some FM game where all of those mini mechanics were taken care of and you gave everyone a squad of 100 real or made up players, but the same 100.
Right.
So like, let's say you did the top 100 players in the world for Liverpool fans, top 100 players in the world for Arsenal fans,
yeah,
and then gave them each a decision every 5 seconds, and then went hive mind. That's not football in the traditional sense, but it clearly relies upon all of the football intuitions we have.
Right. And also, it, you know, Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho were both terrible football players, but they were both fantastic football, well, very good football managers.
And do you not think there's this inverse relationship in some ways between... So in Jose Mourinho's case or Rafa Benitez's case, they've been accused of being the type of managers they as players would have loved to play for. Unimaginative players who wanted that level of instruction.
Right.
I'm wondering if fans who have had to watch West Bromwich Albion trudge around, I don't know why I'm picking on them, but West Bromwich Albion trudge around the Hawthorns playing dodgeball 4-5-1, whether they, by definition, are more resourceful.
But I don't know, because
whose tactics have been given Marcelo.
Sure, but then if you put them in the kitchen and you said, with these raw ingredients, put together, you know, goulash, and they've been eating gruel for years, surely then they go, I don't know how to make goulash.
Yeah, well, they're having Eden Hazard track Gareth McCauley.
Yeah, right. And that's the interesting aspect, right? Like, you can't, if you've not experienced it, I mean, maybe, because maybe Pep Guardiola had never experienced that level of football, but that's why he is such a revolutionary manager, because he's got the imagination to think, ah, I could do this. Which is why also it's important to have creative analysts, because analysts shouldn't just be good at finding the information, but you've got to be creative in order just to even acquire that information in a interesting fashion.
So here's my question to you. If you were to create the most effective hive mind team, but you only wanted them to be a fan of one club?
Yes.
What kind of playing style would you want that club to have?
Exactly. I think, is the question to leave it at this week. Thanks a lot for joining us on the Lozcast. It's been really interesting to chat to you guys. I've really enjoyed this kind of exploration, should we say. Let me know what you guys think.
That was great. And I think probably we're going to have to come back to this topic.
I think we do have to come back to this, but like, weirdly, I kind of want to make like a video on it or something. Like, I'm kind of developing a second Lawrence McKenna channel, because I think there's like a mainstream football channel and like a weird other football channel.
Yeah, one that's a wee bit more conceptual.
Yeah, and possibly a bit more niche. Not really maybe it's cash rich. I hope it's cash rich in the long run, but like, you know, if you guys have enjoyed this, share it with a friend or go and rate it on Apple Podcasts or whatever it is. I'm really interested to see what people's read is on this, because it is such a different conversation to what I'm used to having about football, right?
Pass the pod.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming along, Jamie.
Thanks, Lawrence.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.